2 years ago, Karen moved to Glasgow. Officially, she left to take an internship at the Gallery of Modern Art, but I always felt that she saw the opportunity as an escape route, a way to survive the pain of her father's slow battle with the cancer in his liver by putting an entire ocean between her and the issue. We had only known each other for a year before she left, but it was enough time for both of us to realize that the time we spent with each other was filled with a tension that neither of us wanted to talk about just yet. I wasn't terribly excited about the news when she told me, and I could have done a better job at trying to hide the fact that I was going to miss her. It's not like I could have stopped her from going anyway. Despite how close we'd grown, confessing how I felt about her wasn't going to make her change her mind about going any more than it would have cured her father's illness. In hindsight, I was never even part of the equation. The first 3 months apart saw us building a steady pattern of communication. Pictures were sent via email, JPEG snapshots of her new apartment, ironic pictures of her pretending to be trampled by a bronze horse, its rider ignoring her silent but implied pleas. International calling cards were purchased, and upwards of 200 hours worth of across-the-world anytime minutes were utilized to catch both parties up on recent events and to hold heated debates over the true intentions of one Walter White post-Wayfarer 515 crash. But once January rolled around, I'd finally given up my continuous attempts to convince myself that she didn't need to know about my feelings for her. And so, 7 days into the new year, I called her to tell her that I loved her, which, as you can probably imagine, did not go well. She was audibly flustered when she wasn't startlingly silent, each word of her response being formed at a rapid clip, as if she was using them to build a levee wall to ward off drastically rising waters. How did I know that she was so perfect for me? Did she ever give me an indication that she was going to return to the States once her internship was done? My responses to her questions, I don't know. For the former, and I could only hope that you would, for the latter, were delivered with a flat, monotone timbre, a result of the sickening feeling building in my stomach. We both uttered a curt and overly polite goodbye, and over the course of the next month and a half, the emails gradually stopped coming and the calling cards gathered dust on my nightstand. But on the last day in February, the first postcard arrived. I had almost thrown it out after giving it the briefest of glances while ruffling through the collection of bills and flyers I had pulled out of my mailbox that day. But a second look revealed that the card, creased, worn around the edges, and stamped with the words Par Avion, was emblazoned with a picture of the Arc de Triomphe on its front. On the back, in French, was a single sentence. Recognized the name that had been scribbled under the message. I had never met anyone named Dana Scully. The handwriting, however, was unmistakable. Karen's O's always looked like they were being crushed by some invisible force from either side. Her R's, no matter where they appeared in a word, were always capitalized. There was no doubt in my mind that it was her who had written this card. They started arriving at a steady pace the month after that. Even though Karen and I had started sending casual texts and emails to each other again, roughly every 4 or 5 weeks, a different postcard would find its way into my mailbox. Each card was sent from a different location, and each one displayed a different snapshot of a European landmark or locale on its front. The names of the addressees became more and more familiar with each card. Anne Perkins, Penny Widmore, Jane Margolis, all names that had been ingrained in my head from the marathon TV sessions Karen and I would hold to ward off the insanity that came with the stress of finals week. And just like before, each card contained a single sentence written in a foreign language. The card I received in April contained a phrase in guttural German. A card I found hanging out of my mailbox, half destroyed by a June rainstorm, wore a smudged Spanish sentence like a misshapen bruise along its starkly white back. Translating them wasn't a difficult task, but reading them was. The first one she sent me back in February told me that she saw my face at night in her dreams. The postcard that contained the smudged Spanish proclaimed that she missed the feeling of my arm against hers. Every one of them was a concise yet complete statement of affection, a confirmation of the fact that she did have feelings for me after all. None of them, however, were written in English. Her name didn't appear on a single one. In total, I received over 20 postcards from Karen's various aliases across the span of a year and a half, and at no point whatsoever did I make any attempt to ask her about them. Not a single text, email, or spoken word ever came close to even breaching the topic. I don't want you to think that it was because I didn't love her anymore, or that I had grown tired of her fake names and cryptically displayed sentiments. In all honesty, the reason I let 18 months pass by without ever making a mention of the postcards that she sent me was because I was afraid that if I did, she might have stopped sending them. But everything stops at some point, doesn't it? And so on May 12th, 2011, some out-of-the-blue sense of courage drove me to buy a postcard of my own. I addressed it Karen's office, I even used my full name, and in the rectangular blank space usually reserved for wish you were here's and what a views, I broke down and begged her to come home, to tell me in person, in English, all of the things that she'd only been able to confess under the guise of fake names and foreign tongues. In long, cluttered scrawls of blue ink, I asked her to love me the way I had grown to love her, openly and honestly, and then I mailed it. Went by and I didn't hear a word. The entire month of June was the same. In July, our mutual friend Chris told me that her father had died, but that Karen hadn't made any plans to leave Scotland. It would be two more months after that until she finally packed up her things and came back to the States. But in the very beginning of August, I came home from work to find 8 postcards sitting in my mailbox, and nothing else. All of them were marked with United Kingdom postage stamps, and each one displayed a different picture on its front. A familiar bronze horse with its front hooves lifted into the air, frozen in time before a gallery of modern art. A craggy cliffside dropping violently into a dark ocean. A giant stone obelisk contained within a large glass enclosure placed in a stark green field. Children in plaid skirts covering their ears from the sonic assault of a bagpipe. There were no return addresses. The identity of the senders, real or fake, weren't given. All that was written on each card was a short phrase comprising of 2 words written in plain English. I can't.